I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Edward J. Epstein has spent decades investigating crimes, unsolved crimes, and crimes considered solved but riddled with lingering questions. Mysterious deaths and accidents, conspiracies and cover-ups, from the death of a Vatican banker, to the radiation poisoning of a KGB agent, to the recent disappearance of a Malaysian airliner, these are the things that drive Ed Epstein. And he'll join us in the second hour of the show today to talk about his career and what he's learned about some of the world's most famous crimes and mysteries. First up, Open Phones Wednesday. Time for you to give me a call and share what's on your mind about recent news in Baltimore, Maryland, the nation, and the world. First, the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Open phone lines in this hour. It's Open Phones Wednesday on Midday on WYPR. Hope you can join us if there's something on your mind you want to talk about related to the news here in Baltimore, any place in Maryland, the nation, or the world. Phone lines are open. Here's how you reach us, 410-662-8780. Toll-free long distance for the Midday Show, 866-661-9309. Our Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. I have some emails to read from earlier shows with comments from our listeners. We do hang on to those. If we don't get to read them on the air during the run of the show, I try to follow up, save them, and read them at another point. So we'll do some of that in this hour of the show. But I'd like to hear from you. Open phones, what's ever on your mind here in Baltimore. There's a couple of things that we have not had a chance to talk about here on Midday, a couple of news stories that we have missed recently, and we have an opportunity this hour to talk about them. One is a very tragic story from Waverly the other day, the killing of a three-year-old girl in a drive-by shooting, an innocent victim of a drive-by shooting in Baltimore. The story has received national attention. It's also, you know, raised up the specter of a summer of violence again. We had that one last summer. We had a cycle of some lots of shootings in Baltimore, fatal and non-fatal shootings. And now we've had another cycle of those in Baltimore City. And this little girl, a victim, one of the victims from a series of shootings in Baltimore in the last 10 days. Lots of folks in Waverly gathering to protest and to come together over this thing. If you want to talk about this tragedy, please give me a ring in this hour of the show. This is an opportunity to do that. The police commissioner of Baltimore, Anthony Batts, pledging to make an arrest in that case before the week's out. But just a sad and sickening story about gun violence in Baltimore. Even as the city makes progress on violent crime, you know, it's one step forward, three steps back, it seems like. Two steps forward, two steps back for the city. So there's that. Another story that we didn't get a chance to talk about was the penalty handed down by the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, on Ray Rice, the running back of the Baltimore Ravens. If you want to comment on that, a two-game suspension, which caused quite an uproar, even got to the floor of Congress with U.S. senators, including our two from Maryland, calling for the NFL and the Commissioner Goodell to review the penalty, the punishment of Ray Rice for striking his wife, knocking her unconscious, his then-fiancé, now wife. If you'd like to comment on that, too, I'll take some calls. I'd like to hear from our listeners on that story as well. 410-662-8780. And some other stories, there have been a lot of news lately. On the good side of things, I'm happy to say that the state of Maryland is receiving quite a response, apparently, from people who live here and concerned about children from Central America coming across the border, this influx of kids, unaccompanied minors, crossing the U.S. border with Mexico, and the O'Malley administration in Annapolis trying to find foster homes for them, provide some clothing, tutoring, additional legal services for them. And there's been a very good response, apparently, so far. There's a story in the paper today from the Human Resources Secretary, Ted Dallas, reporting that in Maryland, some 230 people have made inquiries about becoming federal foster parents just in the last couple of days. Mr. Dallas said that compares with only 10 to 15 expressions of interest in the state program in a typical month, the state's foster program. So lots of people interested in at least temporarily becoming foster parents for these kids while their immigration status is determined. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Let's go to Don in Annapolis. Don, welcome to Midday. Don, are you ready to go? We're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Dan. I very much enjoy your show, particularly yesterday's interview with Eric Liu. That was excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
I just wanted to comment on the president's recent remarks about corporations being unpatriotic for not repatriating their overseas profits.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And it seems to me that's blatant demagoguery in terms of the fact that, you know, most corporations, ExxonMobil, GE, Apple, what have you, are multinationals, and they're only doing what's in their own self-interest. And if the president wants to make a criticism of corporate America, they ought to change the tax laws.
Correct. It's legal, the president said, but it's not right. Do you agree with that statement?
Well,
I mean, they're basically doing it. Why are they doing it, Don? To avoid tax liability, right?
They're doing it to maximize their profits. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't do it, wouldn't they be subject to shareholder lawsuits?
I suppose. You mean if they didn't do everything possible to make as much money as possible?
A corporation is a business entity for the profits of their shareholders.
Right.
And they're not patriotic or unpatriotic unless they're dealing with the enemy, which some of them did during World War II, but I'm not commenting on that. It just seems to me that the president's being a demagogue to say they're unpatriotic.
I don't know if I'd go as far as calling him a demagogue on that. I mean, we ought to look up the word demagogue before we use it. It gets used sometimes. I'm not sure we know what it means. But, Don, you're right. I mean, you ought to change the law, right? But this is a president who can't change a law.
Well, all right. Well, then work with Congress.
Work with Congress. That's what I'm saying. This is a president who can't change a law because of the Congress. That's the point I'm making.
Okay, well, that's fine, but I mean, corporations in and of themselves are not patriotic or unpatriotic.
Okay, but corporations are people, right?
Well, yeah, they are. and but ExxonMobil is a multinational.
I agree, but I'm not sure the president is wrong here about the moral question about what you do, how you behave as a corporate citizen of America. You're saying
why doesn't he criticize other Americans for being unpatriotic, for not voluntarily paying more taxes?
Okay. All right, Don. Well, thank you very much. Not voluntarily paying more taxes. Calling out people. I don't know anybody who wants to voluntarily pay more taxes. You can comment on that if you like. What do you think of the president's comment? He was talking about economic patriotism. I think this was last week. And he referred to corporate deserters, companies that these are multinational companies, as Don said, that they merge with overseas firms to basically reduce tax liability. And, you got to change the law. The problem is President Obama is in the middle of his second term, and he can't seem to get any laws changed with the Congress that we have. 410-662-8780. Let's go to David in Hedgesville, West Virginia, who calls us once in a while. David, nice to hear from you again.
Good to hear from you, Dan. Hey, the story you just brought up about the drive-by shooting, I don't know if you see the irony in the fact that we have this surge at the border of people trying to flee the same violence we have in our inner cities.
Yeah, I see it. I've received several letters from people who say, we can't protect our own children. How can we protect these children?
The other irony is that the ones that respect our laws and don't come get the death sentence, and the ones that come in, we're trying to welcome them so we get more and more and more.
What was that about a death sentence?
If they stay, the reason they're coming is they say, you know, it's so violent they'll probably be killed. So if they stay, they get killed, you know. It's just kind of ironic. The real thing we need to do is to solve our drug problem. We need to either legalize it and license people to use it, or enforce against the users. All the money that's fueling all these gangs and drugs and things, violence, is not, you know, your addict. It's on Skid Row. It's the one percenters and the Hollywood elites that are using this stuff for recreation and providing all the money. So, you know, I sent you something that maybe a 10% of net worth fine for, you know, illegally using drugs. So it kind of put the demand down by waking up these people that think they can just snort this stuff and not have any detrimental effect on society.
Okay, David, thank you very much. A couple things about that. I don't know that your Hollywood types are shooting heroin. They might be, some of them. We've had some heroin deaths. We've had more heroin deaths in the United States. It's actually been on the rise. But the people who are addicted to drugs are on the edges and fringes of society, and, you know, the idea of taxing them, telling them we're going to tax your use of heroin is going to somehow discourage them from using it. I don't think that's possible. That isn't logical based on what I know about addictions. And the other thing, pointing out the irony of a child, innocent child in Baltimore being killed by more gun violence in our city and the gun violence that goes on across the country, the irony that we seek to protect or help children who are fleeing across a border from some of the most homicidal cultures right now on the globe in Central America, to say we can't do one without the other. We have to do one first, and then we can do the other. I read several emails like this after my column in Sunday Sun about this immigrant crisis saying that. And I don't know that I don't think that's how you go about things. I think you got to do it all. This is a big, generous, humane country, and you have to do it all. We have a responsibility at our border. Children have come across our border. Some want to just turn them around and send them back to where they came from without exploring why they came here. And as far as the violence goes in Baltimore, you got to do it all. That's why it's a big headache. That's why this is a big challenge. Living life in this society, it's complicated. We all got a lot of work to do. It seems overwhelming, exhausting, debilitating, depressing, but you got to do it all. That's how I feel. Let's go to someone else here. Let's hear from someone else. Ken in Pasadena, on that subject of Ray Rice, thanks very much for calling, Ken.
Yes. Yeah. I find it ridiculous that Congress can make comments, you know, specific senators make comments on Ray Rice and NFL punishment. With all the problems they have, they should stop grandstanding and start doing their job. It's ridiculous.
I agree with you. And the Senate particular took a recess. Stay on the line there with me, Ken. Somebody said to me the other day, how would I feel if I, this was a person who employs people, right? This is a person in management who said, all right, if I dished out a punishment to an employee for something he or she did that's, you know, wasn't work related but behavior related. Anyway, I dished out some punishment, and Senator Mikulski or Senator Cardin or a couple of senators from New York decided to chime in on the punishment I chose for my employee. Would I want Congress sticking their nose into that? And I was kind of with this person in the argument until I realized, you know, we're talking about a very high-profile athlete, and part of the price for being a high-profile athlete who makes lots of money and enjoys lots of glamour as an NFL running back is that you have this response. You are in the public's eye, We are watching you, and we are watching what happens to you when you do something wrong, and as are lots of kids around the country. So I think it carries a heavier burden, and I don't agree with the punishment. I think Roger Goodell looks pretty bad on this one, the NFL. But you can tell us what you think. Steve and Perry Hall, on the same subject of Ray Rice. Go right ahead, Steve.
Hey, I just wanted to bring something up. I'm going to find it very upsetting come October when Ray Rice wears pink out on the field. And I think that's going to really show just how two-faced the NFL is. And just, it's like I said, I would find it very upsetting. And I guarantee he wears pink. I guarantee it.
Steve, what do you think the NFL, the Ravens, should have done given what happened with Ray Rice, what he did to his wife?
You know, it is, like you were saying, it's a hard thing to decide on because as a football player, he's top-notch. Guy's excellent. He's a great football player. As a person, I mean, come on, let's look back into Ravens history. Ray Lewis, seriously, come on. If they had accessory of murder in Atlanta, he'd be done. You know, he would have never been who he is now. Ray Rice, yet again, that's another kind of one of those incidences where we're going to, like, look the other way, act like nothing happened.
We're not quite there.
The glorious player that he is.
Steve, we're not quite looking the other way and acting like nothing happened. It's gotten lots of press attention, and there's been lots of outrage expressed with the two-game suspension. I mean, do you think there should have been more?
I think they should let him go. I think they should let him go. I think they should bar him from the NFL. I think the same thing should happen to a lot of these players that are out there committing crimes, legitimate crimes, and we're just looking the other way on it, like, oh, the entertainment value overrides everything else.
Okay. Steve, thanks very much. I just don't think we look the other way. I think there's press reporting about athletes who get in trouble. Athletes who get in trouble face punishment. It may not always be as severe as you think it should be. Everybody has an opinion about that. I don't think they get away with much. There are lots of athletes with felony convictions who serve their time or whatever and move on and continue to function as athletes because in our society, supposedly, you know, if you do the time and you've satisfied your parole and probation, you get to move on with your life and have a career. This is Midday. Dan Rodrick's here. Open phone lines. Call in if there's something on your mind. Please share it with us. 410-662-8780. Our midday email address, midday@wypr.org. Email response to the first gentleman who called regarding corporate patriotism and President Obama's remarks. John says, a response to the first gentleman, why the president doesn't deem people who don't volunteer to pay extra taxes unpatriotic. The corporations are finding loopholes and moving overseas to pay fewer taxes than they actually owe. Most private citizens, however, are already paying what they owe to begin with. That is why the president is not hypocritical for calling out the corporations, but not regular actual people. So, well, corporations can do this thing. It is a loop. The taxes are all about loopholes, aren't they? And ultimately, you know, one person's loophole is another person's very smart accounting maneuver. I don't know. Your caller said it is corporate responsibility to reduce your tax liability, says Frank in Hampstead. While it is legal and perhaps not unpatriotic, it is certainly unethical. These same companies want the U.S. taxpayer to build infrastructure for them and give them tax breaks at the state and federal level. Further, when companies run into trouble in foreign countries, they expect the U.S. military to run in and save them, and they expect the U.S. government to negotiate trade deals. Well, if corporations want those things, that is what their taxes are paying for. Midday@wypr.org is our email address. One last comment on that by email. This is from Roger, who says, corporations are unpatriotic. I believe this is so because many supervisors, many executives are seemingly more interested in their corporations than in their communities. Back to the phone line. Speaking of the community of Baltimore City, James in Park Heights, we'll go to you next and welcome you to Midday. Hi.
Good afternoon, Dan.
Hey, James.
I wanted to talk about community trust in the police department when you have over $20 million in overtime, Dane Miller reported on. And people talking about domestic violence. The former commander from Baltimore City Police Department, beat his wife and out in Harford County and had three guns. They confiscated guns, found that one of them was from the evidence locker in Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when we need to get real about this crime situation and the trust component. And I actually participated with the police department to try to get a crime solved because I had a 25-year-old shot dead in my block. And I'm telling you, the police department detectives are inept, and you know, the justice component of living in Baltimore City. I have jury duty coming up, and I'm gonna tell you, I don't participate in it because the jury system is too. It's the voyeur process where they get rid of people that are qualified because they are male or female and things like this. I see a total breakdown in trust by the community from the police department, and the police commissioner hasn't said anything about the guy with the evidence, with the gun from the evidence locker, or the $20 million in overtime. People need to be out in an uproar about this mess. What are we getting for our tax money?
Well, you don't believe violent crime has been on the decline in Baltimore?
No.
You just don't believe the numbers that come out of the city police department?
They can do the numbers in any way they want. No, it is not.
They come from the FBI, so you just don't buy it.
No, I don't buy it at all, because they can have crimes that they don't report as homicides, okay? I mean, there's a lot of ways to get around numbers and to diminish.
How do you get around a homicide?
You get around a homicide by not reporting it as a homicide, by reporting it as something else.
I don't know about that,
yeah,
James. Hey, James, let me go back to something else I want to ask you about. You said, I have jury duty coming up in the city next week. You have jury duty?
I have jury duty next month.
And what's your plan for that?
I'll discuss the fact that, number one, I can't judge anybody. That's not my religious belief to begin with. And if I could, the system has to be correct. We have false people being given sentences that haven't committed crimes all over America. This city is no different.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. This is our system. If you're not part of the system, you can just sit there and complain about it. But so you have a little less credibility with me. What are you saying? You're not going to even show up, or you're going to tell the judge
I'll
that
show up.
You're going to tell your judge because of your religious belief you can't judge somebody?
I can't, because the system, I will render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's. Oh. If the system is just, it's not. It's disproportionately skewed to African-American males being incarcerated at a higher rate than anybody else.
Okay. I was just going to talk about the last two times I went for jury duty, I actually got selected, which surprised me. And I actually sat in on two trials, and the jury panel was racially mixed. The defendants were African-American. I felt like the people on the panel, the jurors with me, all took this very seriously. I was actually pleasantly surprised. In both instances, we spent some time. One case was on a Friday afternoon, too, deliberations on a Friday afternoon. People are eager to get to the weekend, you know. But we took our time, and I thought we rendered fair and just verdicts based on facts following deliberations that were taken quite seriously by people and not just scoffed and dismissed as, you know, the whole system is unjust, as James says. Everybody's got a different opinion about that, I suppose. That's mine. Peggy in Baltimore, or Peg. Sorry to call you Peggy if you're not known as Peggy. Hello, Peg.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment on the Ray Rice incident and all of the media attention around it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly not I'm not an advocate of what he did, or his wife, for that matter, but I tend to wonder, why isn't the fact that alcohol was probably involved not mentioned more? Does it have something to do with the fact that they were at a casino and Baltimore will soon open up their own, and they'd rather have the attention on the act rather than what precipitated it?
What kind of advertising do you see when you watch a football game, Peg?
Oh, lots of alcohol, of course.
It's all about beer, right?
Oh, yeah. I know. But, you know, I tend to wonder, would that have happened between the two of them if alcohol was not involved? And I think that, you know, when you go to a casino, of course, alcohol is oftentimes free, so you can continue to gamble. And I just think that that's, you know, probably what precipitated a lot of it.
Well, that may be the reason why it's not discussed, because that's something actually we don't discuss generally as an ingredient for anything, including some of the some of the gun violence in Baltimore City that we're talking about. I don't know what that is. We either take it for granted, or we just avoid talking about it, or in denial about to what extent alcohol contributes to our problems. Thank you very much for your comments. 410-662-8780. What did Roger Goodell have to say about this, about his suspension of Ray Rice? He said it was consistent with other cases. He said our policy is clear on this. This was last Friday in Ohio, as part of getting ready for the Pro Football Hall of Fame festivities. We have a very firm policy that domestic violence is not acceptable in the NFL, and that there will be consequences for that. When we're going through the process of evaluating the issue and whether there will be discipline, you look at all of the facts that you have available to us. Law enforcement normally has more on a normal basis, has more information, facts than we have. We'll get as much as we possibly can. And then you also have the opportunity to sit down with the individual and maybe others to determine how that individual is reacting to it. And one last bit here. He says, I think what's important here is that Ray is being accountable for it. He recognizes he made a horrible mistake, and he knows what he did is unacceptable by his standards and by our standards. I was also very impressed with Ray in the sense that Ray is not only accepting this issue, but he's saying, I was wrong. I want to see people when they make a mistake. I want to see them take responsibility and be accountable for it. Back to the phone lines here, open phone lines here in this hour of midday. Kay in South Baltimore had something to say about Ray Rice as well. Hello, Kay.
Hi. Yeah, my point was that I keep hearing that people are so quick to judge, and it also relates to the, you know, our prisons. We're supposed to give people a second chance, and what about rehabilitation? He's also taken steps to go and get some help. So when somebody makes these efforts, give them a second chance. And, like, it just, to me, it also relates to the prison system. Somebody gets accused of a crime, then the public, oh, they're obviously guilty, and then they should be go to jail forever and ever and ever. What about rehabilitation? It's just a secondary thought.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll go to William in Bel Air next for a follow-up comment on the first call of today's show, today's hour. Brought up the President Obama's statement about economic or corporate patriotism. William, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing pretty good. A lot of topics all over the place.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
I don't remember what I was even thinking about. But
sorry about that.
You think about, just to touch on Ray Rice, I've been thinking on that one too. I mean, every scenario is different. So I'm not saying that he came to the right scenario, but, you have to really admire the folks that have success and money and fame and everything in the world thrown at their feet, and they handle it in a balanced fashion. And, you know, you have to shake your head when other folks just can't do that, because they do have everything thrown at their feet, and they still tend to step on themselves from time to time. But what I was talking about, the one issue that I think I did call about was felt that the president, he kind of stepping on himself when it comes to trying to get Congress or the Senate to work in unison. I think that when he came on board, you know, he was all about doing it one way, and he was not a negotiator. And I think that he's paying the price for that. And I think that's a good lesson for anybody that's going to run for office. If you dig your feet in the sand and you're not going to negotiate, get the other side at least a little bit, I mean, you're not going to go anywhere.
William, you know, if you look at the record, actually, President Obama came in with many statements saying he was willing to compromise. And as time went on and he saw that that wasn't working, that's when he dug in his heels. You remember the extension of the income tax cuts in December of what year was that, 2010, you know that he started with that attitude and saw that he wasn't going to get very far with it. I think you have it backwards there. I think he dug in his heels as time went on now.
But I think that in any type of situation, I don't care what it is, business, professional, politics, you've got to go, you got to find common ground, and you got to give the other side room to wiggle, or else, you know, you're going to lose that wiggle room yourself down the road.
Come on now, wait a minute, William. What wiggle room, for instance, on immigration reform, for instance? So the president and the Democrats come up with a plan. They work things out, it seems like, with the Senate. But over in the House, it's just no. They take this hard line over there, partly under the influence of the Tea Party, major part now because of that.
Yeah, but, you know, if you look back in this country throughout its history, you know, we've always been, you know, counter to counter. I mean, it's never been one side gets everything they want. And, you know, the country suffers in some aspects when we all do go down one road rather than another.
William, do you think this is a unique situation? We have the shutdown of the government. We had a refusal to even pay our bills during the debt ceiling fiasco. Do you think this is a unique situation with this particular president and this Congress?
I don't think he's a good negotiator. I mean, you know, some folks are good at it, some aren't, you know, and I think that's what you're seeing here.
Okay. William, thank you for your comments and your thoughts on this. We'll take another little break here on Midday. Open phone lines on this Wednesday on WYPR. John Monahan, Mad for Science Monahan, is going to be joining us in this hour of the show for a mini Midday on Science report when we get back. And we'll take some more phone calls, and I'll read some more emails. A short break here on Midday. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Open phone lines here on the Midday Show. Dan Roderick's with you, 410-662-8780 to join us this hour with any thoughts that you'd like to share. Holly in Baltimore calling about the what's happening in Gaza, Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Hello, Holly.
Hi, thank you. A lot of people have touched on the issue of violence in this program. And it makes me think about the U.S. government's involvement in what's going on over there. We supply enormous amounts of weaponry to Israel, and I'm not anti-Israeli, but if you look at how many civilians, Palestinian civilians, have been killed, I think it's 1,800, I'm not certain, but there are less than 10 Israeli civilians. I don't want to see anyone killed, but I would like to see our citizenry be aware and maybe do something about our accountability in this.
All right. Thank you, Holly, for bringing that up. And I advise you to read a story today in the New York Times under the headline, Civilian or Not? New fight in tallying the dead from the Gaza conflict to try to determine who is a combatant and who is actually an innocent civilian. You might want to read that story. Now, regarding our show on July 22nd, or was it July 23rd? I'm sorry. July 23rd midday show. Several people upset with what we presented that day. Our guests were Max Hilaire, chairman of the Political Science Department at Morgan State University, and Kimberly Katz, associate professor of history at Towson University and a Middle East expert. And we were talking about Israel and Gaza and Israel and Hamas. And this is some of the reaction we received, that I received. This is a letter to me from Wallace in Mount Washington, who says, "You have lost a fan. I follow your Twitter feeds and listen to your radio show on a daily basis, but you have lost me. I am a liberal Jew living in Mount Washington, and I must say that you have lost a follower. I thought you were someone who always took up the case of the disadvantaged and shed light on the plight of innocence. You granted a forum to a guest who spent almost an hour bashing Israel and misstating, sometimes lying, about the situation the Jews in Israel face. I sat in astonishment. Israel is one of the most liberal countries in the world and a beacon for freedom and democracy in a part of the world that sees brutality and intolerance on a daily basis. No one supports the loss of innocent lives in a war, especially Israel. No country has gone to the lengths Israel has to protect the lives of innocent civilians. Hamas is a vicious terrorist organization and used these hospitals and schools, etc., to build tunnels and launch rockets. Another email, this one from Alan in Baltimore, said, I listen to your show almost every day for the past couple of years and have always respected your outlook on matters that affect this state, our country, and the world. After your show on Israel-Gaza, I must say I've lost that respect. You provided a one-sided view of the conflict in Israel by having a guest that spewed some of the worst anti-Israeli venom I have heard. To say that Israel foments violence against innocents is a lie. Kimberly Katz stated that the U.S. supports Israel because of campaign money in this country. This is a line used by some of the world's most notorious anti-Semites. She called Israel's war unnecessary. No country would allow 2,000 rockets launched against them without defending themselves. It is hard for us to conceive of an enemy that hides behind schools and children, but that's what we have. By having a guest like Ms. Katz and providing a forum to highlight civilian casualties in Gaza, that does not provide all of the facts. You are doing a disservice to your listeners. The overwhelming majority of the leaders of the free world have lined up in support of Israel. On the other side of this, some emails came in saying that they were pleased with the show. Jody wrote in to say, I had the opportunity to listen to your show on Israel-Gaza. I want to thank you for having the courage and conviction to allow Dr. Katz the opportunity to offer a perspective of the Israel-Palestine conflict that is not often available in mainstream U.S. media. Access to all points of view is the only way to develop an understanding of a very complex issue. And this email came in from Samir, writing from Tunisia. I was happy to have the opportunity to listen online to your radio program from Tunisia. Your conversation with your guests, Professor Katz and Hilaire, boosts our belief in the existence of unbiased, unaffiliated, and honest media. The arguments presented by your guests, and especially Professor Katz, give us a clear vision of how the academic world should observe, assess, and react to our daily concerns in an objective way. Thank you very much. So more comments are welcome, and we'll plan a future show on this very complex issue and try to have both sides reflected in the conversation. Midday at WYPR.org. We always appreciate your compliments and criticisms of the show and suggestions for future programs. We appreciate it very much. Let's take another call. Dale in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Go right ahead, please, Dale. Dale, you there? Maybe not. I'll go to Cody then. Could you put Cody on the line? Cody's calling from Baltimore. Hello there.
How you doing?
All right, Cody.
I've never actually called the radio station before, but I heard you talking to the lady who was talking about jury duty. She was talking about how
James. James in Park Heights.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And she was talking about how the numbers are skewed.
James in Park Heights, a guy.
Excuse me, sorry.
That's all right.
He was talking about how the numbers are skewed. And I argue with a lot of people about this over and over about how the crime numbers were down since especially the early 90s. And I wouldn't have believed it unless it actually happened to me. I was sitting on my aunt's porch one night with a bunch of my family members. And somebody somewhere started shooting. And a decent amount of the bullets actually hit my aunt's house, and there were young kids inside. And of course, someone called the police. But when they got there, they came out with their guns drawn, and yelling and everything. And then once they saw that nobody was killed, they started to get in the cars and leave. And I asked them, "You're not going to take a police report? What about my aunt's insurance? And all those kinds of things." And he said, his exact words were, "Why should we take a report if there's no homicide?" I mean,
Cody, when was this? How long ago?
I don't know. I was in college, so it was probably 2006.
Okay.
2005, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems to me we had some stories about, non-fatal shootings maybe not being reported. I have to go back and check that, but sounds familiar to me.
Trying to file a police report.
Yeah.
Police wouldn't take the report. And I've seen a documentary, I believe it was on Frontline. It was, and this was a few years ago, too, but the crime stat software that police use.
Mm-hmm.
In the documentary, you were talking about police not taking reports on rapes, that people were trying to report all kinds of things because it turned out that the numbers went down drastically the first few years they started using it, but it was hard to keep showing those improved numbers, so they resorted to not taking reports.
Hmm. And where was that, in a particular city?
I think it was some city. I think it was Boston or Chicago.
Okay, because you know you would have to have across the country the FBI supposedly monitors the reporting and reports out to us the crime trends in the country based on what they get from the various police departments. I mean, something must explain why crime is down. Mostly violent crime is down throughout the country. So is it because the police aren't reporting all the crimes? I think it would be hard to pull that off after a while, but I don't know. Cody, I don't know about.
I don't think there's one reason.
Yeah.
For all of it. But when you live on Park Heights, you do see the police doing that kind of stuff a lot. Whether it's not reporting something, whether it's trampling on people's rights, harassing people, it happens a lot. And I can understand certainly how the gentleman that called from Park Heights would have those opinions that he had.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, so do I. Cody, thank you very much. I just disagreed with him about the responsibility when it comes to jury duty and the jury system. John Monahan is here. John Mad for Science Monahan, who joins us from time to time with Midday on Science. You have John, nice to see you again.
Nice to be here.
You have this interesting story about craters in Siberia.
Right.
And what's the news from Siberia? Apparently it's not very good.
Afraid not. What's happened is, I guess a little over a week ago, they found a large crater in Siberia. Basically, it looks sort of like a volcano crater. They weren't quite sure what had caused it. Since then, they've had a couple of other craters come by, and what they've been able to detect is large amounts of methane in the craters. The thinking now is that these were methane explosions. This is actually something that climate scientists have been worrying about for quite a while. The idea is, as the tundra in Russia and in Canada and the U.S. begins to thaw, what happens is large amounts of methane get released. It builds up and then explodes very rapidly into the atmosphere. That's a major problem because methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is.
Right.
So this has the potential to actually accelerate global warming quite a bit.
Do they think this just happened?
Yes.
Oh, this happened recently?
Yes, quite recently.
Okay. Wow. How big are you say volcano-sized craters?
Yeah, these are really substantial craters, you know, hundreds of feet deep.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, just to update us today, is on Ebola. Dr. John Smarr, who's on our show from time to time, he's on vacation, and so he couldn't make it here this week. So we have two people being treated at Emory University, right?
Yes.
For Ebola now.
Right.
A doctor and a nurse, is that right?
Right. There's Dr. Kent Brantley and another aid worker, Nancy Reitbol, have been taken to Emory University and are currently being treated with an experimental drug, which seems to be showing some progress.
Okay, but Ebola in West Africa, this has now affected, what, at least three countries that we know of?
Four.
Four.
Actually,
yeah.
The latest from Ebola is that the World Health Organization has listed the current death toll as 932. British Airways has suspended flights into and out of Sierra Leone, and that the doctor who is leading the effort against Ebola or to contain Ebola in Sierra Leone has actually died from the disease.
Hmm. When John Smarr gets back from his vacation, we'll follow up on this because he's an infectious disease expert. All right.
Yeah.
John, nice to see you.
Nice to be here.
Is there something else to offer?
Oh, just a couple things on the World Health Organization and what they're doing. On Ebola. Today they started a two-day emergency meeting to decide whether to declare this outbreak a public health emergency of international concern. Meanwhile, the World Bank has committed $200 million to combating the disease.
Thank you very much. John Monahan joins us from time to time for a little Midday on Science. We'll get you back again here soon, John.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. John's been sitting here listening to me read emails and take phone calls. This is a follow-up on the comments about President Obama from Jeff, who says, President Obama has an impossible time getting anything done because he is constantly seen as a tyrant, a traitor. It will only be when the next president takes office and we begin looking back that the picture will be seen for what it truly is, and the real credit is given to a guy who I see trying his butt off every day and can't even have a day off without someone giving him a load of, thank you very much, Jeff. And on jury duty, is this one from Michelle? I think this is from Michelle. It says, I get your point about being on a jury and everyone working together to come to a fair and just decision. That probably happens in the majority of cases involving jury trials. However, I knew there was going to be a however. What is missing in this assessment is the impact of systematic injustice. Oftentimes, African American men in particular are exposed to the legal system in higher numbers than whites. A crime or misdemeanor committed by a white man not even come to a jury trial, and if it does, oftentimes sentencing and more lenient leading to sentencing, which leads to sentencing disparities. If one has enough resources, one may not even see a day in court. Just because your experience as an individual seemed fair doesn't mean it is a fair from a systematic standpoint. Of course, I was passing along basically anecdotal information from my own experience on jury duties. Nicole wrote on Twitter, says, I think you provided a balanced show with Professor Katz, something that hasn't been done. That was on regarding Israel and Hamas. Let's go back to the phone lines. Anne, who is a pediatrician, calling us from Baltimore. Hello, Anne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So early on in the show, mention was made of the kids who are coming up from Central America.
Yeah.
And their needs in terms of social services, et cetera. I was just wondering how their health care needs are being met, because in the past, certainly, when there have been situations a bit analogous to this, local health departments have stepped up, portions of the faith community have stepped up, and a variety of creative approaches have been taken to meeting the needs of children for immunizations and other issues. Are there efforts like that are starting or being planned?
You know, the O'Malley administration is trying to put together this and touches on all of these services in the conversations the governor has had with various charities and nonprofits to get the ball rolling on this. And I don't know exactly what it says about health issues. These folks are uninsured. So, and I know about just the other day I had a conversation over at the Esperanza Center about the needs for psychological services, mental health services, and Johns Hopkins has an outreach into the Latino community, as does the Kennedy Krieger Institute. While those programs are overloaded, they still have room, apparently, and are taking referrals, because a lot of folks are, these folks, adults and children, are survivors of trauma. So I know that need, at least they're trying to meet that need over in Southeast Baltimore as far as Hopkins and Kennedy Krieger goes. But as the general health needs, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I'd like to know more about what they're doing there myself. So I have to look into that. We have time for a quick comment. Pete in Baltimore, I'll let you have the final word on the same subject we started the hour with. So go right ahead. You only get about 40 seconds, Pete. Now, okay. I'll listen to you. Go ahead.
We take for granted now that corporations' only duty is to maximize their profits, but they were created by us and the government to do more than that, and for most of our history, we have assumed that one of the reasons corporations exist is to contribute to the public welfare. We, through our laws, have defined their duties, defined their privileges, created the infrastructure and the laws and the tax breaks and everything else that they use to make money. And now at a time when the country is on the ropes economically and almost every other way, we have an obligation to hold the most powerful sector of our country, the richest sector of our country, to a responsibility that is higher than just being an economic bottom feeder.
Very good, Peter. Very good, Peter. You did it within the time allowed. You went about 10, 15 seconds over. That's okay. That was very good, though. Thank you for those closing thoughts. In contrast to our opening thoughts from our first caller. Was it Dawn? I can't remember. I got to write them all down. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is just the first hour. Phone line's going to stay open for the second hour because Ed Epstein's going to be joining us, talking about all kinds of conspiracies, unsolved crimes, mysteries, things that you've wondered about for years. You can ask Ed. Even on his website, it says, Ask Ed Anything. You can ask Ed anything. That's coming up in the second hour of our show. Take a break here for lunch, provided by Apples and Oranges Fresh Market, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the catering menu. Apples and Oranges, located at 1900 North Broadway in Baltimore. More information at applesandorangesmarket.com. See you after the news.